It's really about hierarchy, control. We know better. We want to have a society which works this way. And America, by nature, works this way.
Hi, I'm Ted Ballacher with Reason TV, and today I'll be speaking with Joel Kotkin. Kotkin is the Distinguished Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, and his most recent book is The Next 100 Million, America in 2050. What's the thesis of your book?
Well, basically, the book really talks about the fact that the U.S. has got a very different demographic trajectory than the countries that we usually compare ourselves with, most particularly in East Asia and in Europe. And that means that we have a different set of opportunities and a different set of challenges than other countries. And, you know, I'm basically optimistic because it's much better to have a growing younger population than a shrinking older population.
Optimism is in short supply these days. What would you say to a pessimistic conservative who's worried about America's future, pointing to things like runaway spending, immigration?
Well, I would say, first of all, the main thing is that there's been pushback. It seems to me remarkable that 2 years after progressives, as they call themselves now, were seeing a new millennium where they were going to be dominant and virtually unopposed, you've had an enormous shift in opinion back to fairly conservative positions. So in terms of immigration, although there obviously are some problems in the immigration policy, immigration is a vote for America. People coming here, they're choosing to come here. They're going through tremendous obstacles to get here, and they replenish our society. And we've done a reasonably good job of integrating them.
What would you say to a liberal who's concerned about the future of America, perhaps worried about environmental problems, sprawl, things like that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that the fact of the matter is Americans are environmentally minded. I think we are seeing reductions in how much energy we use. I think the market mechanism will work extraordinarily well to get people to buy smaller cars or insulate their homes. I think that's the best mechanism we have. And I think the younger generation of Americans are very environmentally conscious.
Is there maybe one or two American cities out there today that you think kind of represent what America will look like in 2050?
Well, I think there's going to be cities that I think are going to be much more important than they are today. Dallas and Houston, among the mega cities, I think are going to be more important. But there's a whole series of cities in the middle of the country, Kansas City, Omaha, Fargo, Sioux Falls, Des Moines, all of which I think have reasonably good trajectories.
And you write a lot about this, too, the migration to flyover country. Can you, I think a lot of people, they look kind of quizzically at you if you say Omaha. What do you mean by that?
Well, what you're seeing and you're already seeing is that places like Omaha or even Kentucky, where I was recently, now have net immigration. These were places that were hemorrhaging people for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, in some cases 100 years, and now actually are attracting people from the outside. As you get 100 million more people, the natural process is that the places that are already big will get bigger, more crowded, more congested, more expensive, and that the next generation will look for other places to live what they consider to be American middle-class standard of living.
So let's look at some of the broad strokes of your book. What will America look like in 2050?
America will be a very diverse country, but it will be diverse in its diversity. In other words, I don't believe that we're going to have, as some conservatives believe and some progressives hope, these very unmelted groups of Hispanics who only speak Spanish or Chinese who only speak Chinese. What you're going to see is a lot of blending, tremendous growth in the mixed-race population, and an American culture that will be very, very different than the one today. I was in Louisville recently, and I ran into a band that was called Appalatina, and it was a blending of Appalachian music with Latin music. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that, and I think that's going to make America a very exciting place in the next 20, 30 years.
And beyond the welcoming of immigrants, what else do you see as on America's side?
Well, I think there are several things. One is immigrants. A big thing that we have, which is part of flyover country, enormous natural resources. We're the agricultural superpower of the world. You know, food is going to be a huge, huge industry in the future because you have 3 billion more people. A good part of that population is going to want better quality food. There's no way that China and India create high-quality food in the amounts that are necessary in the next 20, 30 years.
And you write that in the future the suburbs will grow in influence. Of course, that's not what the planners have in mind a lot of times. So there's tremendous pressure politically to get people to centralize into cities. The people seem to want the opposite. How's that going to sort itself out?
I think that one of the biggest problems that the planners have is they are just contemptuous of what human beings want, what the vast majority of the population wants. And I don't think that works long term. This isn't Europe. We have a growing population. We just did a survey recently. Millennials, their favorite place where they want to live is suburbs. You ask immigrants, they want to live in suburbs. These are the two groups who are going to shape the future. Now, you can impose this kind of planning regime over people's preferences. I think you'll get enormous pushback over time. This is one of the big differences between Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And I supported Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton understood that the average American, their goal in life was to have a nice house in a nice neighborhood with maybe a little backyard. That was what they wanted. And he never, never, never looked down on that aspiration. And nobody working for him would go out there and be against that aspiration. The Obama administration is very different that way.
You do a lot of work in job growth as well, and that's a hot topic these days with the high unemployment rate. It looks like, once again, Texas cities have dominated the areas that
and Washington, D.C., unfortunately.
Right, for different reasons.
Moscow on the Potomac.
What's there for these Washingtonians to learn about what's going on in Texas?
Well, I think what you need is you need to have a pro-business attitude, and you have to invest in infrastructure. You know, the conservative mantra, don't spend money, don't have taxes, that's really not what's happened in Texas. In Texas, they've put a lot of money into basic infrastructure. The formula seems to me to be that the government proper role is to provide the infrastructure, if you will, the highway for the economy, and then let the private sector sort of have the dominant role in creating jobs and figuring out where we should go next in terms of employment. When the government gets so involved in everything that every job is scrutinized by who works there, gender, race, carbon emissions, after a while you get to a point where the entrepreneur says, forget about it. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm not going to create those jobs. And we need those entrepreneurs to be out there creating jobs. And they're doing it much more in Dallas and Houston than they are in New York or Los Angeles.
Let's talk a little bit about how people will be working in the future. You say that telecommuting is one thing that's going to be experiencing a lot of growth.
Well, telecommuting is the logical solution to the energy problem. It is the predominant way that we can cut back the amount that people travel. And it has lots of other positive things. People have more time to be at home. They're more community-based. I call in the book the new localism. That's a big part of the next 100 million. Stronger, more cohesive communities, whether it's a neighborhood or in a city or in a suburban community or a small town. And what I find striking, really striking, is environmentalists and the government papers that talk about how are we going to reduce our carbon emissions and energy use never use the word telecommuting.
It's as if they use the word rail a lot.
They use the word rail, which is infinitely less efficient, doesn't really work in many cases. Because the problem with telecommuting, it's like the suburbs. It's a big thing, but it has no constituency. It has no voice. There's almost nobody out there pushing for it. I live in this extraordinarily poorly run city of Los Angeles. I have to pay to work at home. I pay a fee so that I don't drive, and I'm eyes on the street, and I spend time with my kids, and I ride my bike for most of my errands, and I pay a fee for doing that. But they would give me an incentive if I went to an office in downtown Los Angeles. That would be good. But what I think people don't like about telecommuting or suburbs or neighborhoods having power in cities, and I live in quite an inner city area, I think the real reason is it's control. It's really about hierarchy, control. We know better. We want to have a society which works this way. And America, by nature, works this way.